From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Dan Z and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is, yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last! Where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hello, this is Dan Z, and welcome to show number 44 of Coffee with Kenobi, a Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. Filling in for Corey Club is our good friend and co-host, Jeff McGee.
Hello, everybody. Be sure to check out our recap of Force Friday featuring Steve Sansweet and Chris Perillo, as well as Dan and Corey's live experiences at the event. We have a number of book reviews from Force Friday on CoffeeWithKenobi.com as well, featuring many of our bloggers sharing their take on the amazing offerings that have debuted from Lucas Books. As always, I'd also like to invite you to head over to MarvinDogMedia.com to check out Bantha Banter, a Star Wars chat show. The latest episode, I've interviewed Marcus Doering, who is a member of the 501st, and we talk about his experiences as a stormtrooper, as well as growing up in Germany during the fall of the Berlin Wall. It took a tangent there that got really interesting. And, of course, as always, Talking Toys with Taylor and Jeff, we have constant Star Wars content with our once-a-month action figure exclusive Star Wars episodes, and you might like some of the other shows that we do. So head on over and check out everything that we have to offer.
A special shout out to Mediocre Jedi, Mike Audette, Neil Lowry, Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Chris Perillo, Graham Densham, Jesse, Laughing Says, and the rest of our CWK family for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page. We really do appreciate it. By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a coffee chat podcast of your own. Check out our webpage or the show notes for more information. In today's show, Scott Murray joins us as we discuss our topic for show number 44, Attack of the Clones. Scott continues our journey with us through the six existing films as we look at the more prevalent themes, moments, and characters of Episode 2. As we approach The Force Awakens, this is your chance to re-examine the saga, Coffee with Kenobi style.
We will also talk Force Friday sales, Star Wars Reads Day, Dan Z will review Disney Infinity 3.0, and Mark Von Ohlen returns to discuss the new sets from Topps, including The Force Awakens.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Wait, this is interesting.
You found something.
I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
For our first news story, we go back to Force Friday to talk about the effect that sales had on the overall retail environment. It looks like sales, if I'm reading this correctly, Dan, sales of Star Wars merchandise grew six times over the recent weekly averages. Is that correct? Is that what I'm reading?
Yeah.
This is from Jedi News.
Right. And from Toy World Mag is their source. One of every $11 for that week was spent on a Star Wars toy. That's staggering,
mind-boggling.
It really isn't.
Now I don't understand. Is that toy sales or total?
Well, this article says that 42% of, let's see, the figures reveal the top three super categories made up 87% of total dollar sales for the week.
This has got to be toys, since it's Toy World magazine. That's what I'm going to assume.
I think so.
Yeah, 87% of total dollar sales of toys for the week were for Star Wars or in Star Wars categories.
If I was savvy with the soundboard, I'd put in a money sound effect right there, because that is incredible. And we've since learned that they did this to get a bit of a head start on the Christmas shopping, and I think it worked.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was incredible.
It was Christmas in September. 87% of the total sales for the week, with action figures accessories bringing in 42%, building sets at 27%, which would be Lego, I assume, and 18% being made up from vehicles.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of how you would expect it to shake out, because action figures, you know, you can buy a lot of more action figures than you can vehicles because they're less expensive. It says that Force Friday provided a phenomenal lift for Star Wars, growing sales six times its recent average weekly sales. And the top-selling Star Wars item of the week was Hasbro's Star Wars Black Series 6-inch assortment, which I believe, because I've only seen one of them on shelves in the last 3 weeks. I saw a Finn at my local Walmart, and I didn't buy it because I don't really like the sculpt.
Yeah, his sculpt isn't as strong as the others. I don't really know why.
None of the humans, him or Rey, either one, I didn't really like the sculpt. The paint, the Finn, Rey, it was more the paint app, but... yeah, I like the Captain Phasma that I've seen is amazing, as is Kylo Ren. But yeah, the human figures, I don't know, there just seems to be a little bit of a drop in quality to me.
The Black Series 6-inch is apparently the leading figures to purchase, and I'm surprised I'm not gravitating more towards them than I am. I've had Kylo Ren in my hands a couple of times, and I just because I just care more about the 3 3/4-inch. But I'm also trying to focus on, you know, Disney Infinity figures and all kinds of other stuff too. So, I mean, I think they're cool and I understand the appeal, but yeah, some of the sculpts just don't seem to do it, especially the human ones.
It's definitely a set that I find myself having no problem being selective with. I don't feel like I have to get every single one. I can pick and choose. Now, the 3 3/4-inch action figures, I've seen almost as few of those. I have seen the only ones that I see on a regular basis are the Resistance Fighter, which is just sort of a nameless figure. And there was one other, the guy who has the hat, like the cool.
It looks like Kimbo. Yeah.
Yeah. Kim, that's him. Yeah. I see him, but I don't see any of the others.
You need to move to Illinois.
Apparently.
I see him fairly regularly. Yesterday I went to Kohl's because I'd heard from Tom that there's quite a few things going on there, and they have like 8 or 9 displays all over the place, and they had a ton of figures.
They did, but aren't they charging $12 a pop for them?
They were 8.
If mine had been 8, I would have bought them. I finally found some at the Kohl's near me over the weekend, and yeah, they were $11.99 each for the 3 3/4 basic figures.
Yikes.
And yeah, I'm not paying $12 for one.
No, I don't think that's that would be prudent. They do have a stunning Millennium Falcon and First Order TIE Fighter that are Bluetooth, and they're like huge sculpts, like something you could display as a model. But and they ran $70, but they look exquisite as well.
Well, James Howell posted a video of his I think he posted it. I don't know if he posted it on the Coffee with Kenobi page. I can get him to share it. But of his in action, he got the Millennium Falcon, and it looks phenomenal. I don't know how it sounds, but it looks phenomenal. And if I needed a Bluetooth speaker, I would definitely buy one.
That's how I have to put that in my mind. Of course, James Howell is one of our bloggers at Coffee with Kenobi.
Exactly.
So very good. Yeah, lots of exciting things. Plenty to spend your money on. There's no question about that.
No kidding.
For our next news story, Star Wars Reads Day is coming up, and Coffee with Kenobi is doing something here locally in the central Illinois area. And basically what we're doing is from 9 to noon, we're having a Star Wars Reads Day at the school where I teach and Tom is a librarian. Corey and I are going to be broadcasting live, as is Star Wars Nerds Unite, which is a new podcast that we met on Force Friday. We're having a special interview with Ian Desher, a video interview that's being recorded just specifically for this event. It's really exciting. Read like a Rebel, and of course, Star Wars and literacy go together really nicely. So it's going to be a ton of fun. If you're interested in that, go ahead and send us an email or a DM on Twitter, and we'll be happy to give you more information about it.
Love the logo for this year's Star Wars Reads Day with BB-8 leaning over the book reading.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. It's going to make a nice t-shirt.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And now, your espresso shot with the Bearded Trio.
Hi everybody, hope you're all well. It's Rob here from the Bearded Trio, bringing your latest espresso shot on Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, and John Williams. And let's start with some Steven Spielberg news. Olivier Cook has landed a role in Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One. Now, this is unofficial news at the time of recording this. Now, the movie is based on Ernie Cline's sci-fi novel, and the casting news has come from the big shots like Variety and Hollywood Reporter. Now, Olivier Cook is best known for a role in a movie called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. Now, you can head over to the Bearded Trio and watch a trailer for that film. As I say, this is completely unofficial news at the moment, but coming from the big shots. So it sounds like it's legitimate news. Now, in a recent interview with Yahoo News, Steven Spielberg has said not working with John Williams on Bridge of Spies is just a blip, and normal service will be resumed for the BFG, which is also going to be directed by Steven Spielberg. Now, that means that we may get a hint that Steven Spielberg will be teaming up with John Williams once more for Ready Player One. That's not been announced yet, but saying it's just a blip means that he has every intention of working with John Williams for, obviously, the BFG, which is confirmed, also Ready Player One. Now, in the interview, Steven Spielberg said that Johnny Williams will be back to do the BFG. We've only not worked together twice in 42 years. The first one was The Color Purple in 1985. And the second time was because Johnny had a small medical procedure that precluded him from writing and scoring my movie in the window that he was going to do. He's fine. He's 100% back to work on Star Wars, but it sadly precluded him from working on Bridge of Spies. He also said, I was able to work with Thomas Newman, who I'm a big fan of. This is just a blip, and we're both sad about it, but we're excited to get back together for the BFG. So there we go. Steven Spielberg missed John Williams, but also gave praise to Thomas Newman, who's a very good composer, and I'm looking forward to listening to the soundtrack to Bridge of Spies from Thomas Newman. Now, the executive chairman of Ford Motor Company, Bill Ford, announced at an event last week that his company will continue to sponsor Steven Spielberg Shoah Foundation, the Eyewitness Program. Steven Spielberg was in attendance and said, my dream through the Shoah Foundation is to someday have programs like Eyewitness become prerequisites for graduating high school, for tolerance education to be folded into the social science study program in public high schools and private schools around the nation and around the world. That is my ultimate goal. Now, the Shoah Foundation runs Eyewitness is an educational website that provides access to more than 1,500 full-life histories and testimonies of survivors and witnesses of genocides. Ford Motor Company donated $180,000 to help expand the Eyewitness to more schools in the Detroit area. Now, Ford addressed the crowd saying, I feel that any corporation's role in the world is to try and make people's lives better. Now, if you're a Steven Spielberg fan but you're not too sure which movie to watch, head over to the Bearded Trio. I've created a video where I've put every single trailer to every Steven Spielberg directed movie into one video. It's over an hour long, but you can watch every trailer to all the movies that Steven Spielberg has directed in his career, right from Amblin all the way up to Bridge of Spies. So that way you can choose which film you want to watch from everybody's favorite director, Steven Spielberg. Now, as you know, George Lucas is a big Formula One fan, and he was spotted at the Italian Grand Prix over the weekend. He was invited by the Mercedes Formula One team. He was in the pits watching the events unfold, and he was also asked to go and interview the top three drivers after the race on the podium in front of a very loud and very big Tifosi Italian crowd who were all there to support the Ferrari team. Now, he interviewed Lewis Hamilton, who was the winner, Sebastian Vettel, who finished second, and Felipe Massa, who drives for Williams, and he finished third. George Lucas was obviously loving it, but he seemed to be taken back by the crowd and how loud they were. But I'm sure, as a Formula One fan that he is, I'm sure he was taking in all the atmosphere at the Italian Grand Prix. The saga over George Lucas's museum vision is perhaps going into a third act with what could be a compromise. A revised plan would see the museum being scaled back in the hope that it would satisfy a non-profit group called Friends of the Park. Now, the complaint filed by Friends of the Park consisted of concerns that the original plans would see the museum being built south of Soldier Field in the Chicago Park District. The Friend of the Park group argued that the city has no authority to hand over the land based on a legal principle known as the public trust doctrine. Now, that doctrine makes a state a trustee over natural resources and require it to ensure open spaces are preserved and accessible to the public. Now, it sounds fair, but currently the area that the museum want to build on is occupied by two car parks. Now, the new agreement is in place, which would see the proposed museum plans go from 400,000 square feet to approximately up to 300,000 square feet. The museum would see it include a parkland, which would be accessible to the public. However, this doesn't seem to be the end of the complaint for the group, who it seems really love their car parks. Now, the US District Judge John Dara told Friends of the Park that, in my judgment, you don't have any viable complaint. However, the group's attorney, Sean Morrell Doyle, said the complaint would largely remain unchanged. He said, "We see our lawsuit from the beginning as not being about the specifics of the document, but whether or not it's okay for the city and the park district to sell public land to a private entity like the Lucas Museum." So it seems the complaint has changed from providing open space, which was the original complaint, to now whether they have a right to own that property. The saga continues. I'm sure this is going to be going on for quite some time, much to the frustration of George Lucas. We will keep you informed here on Your Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio. That wraps up your latest Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you join us on the Bearded Trio Facebook page. We're also on Twitter as well. Just type in the Bearded Trio into your keyboard thingy and you will find us. And we're also at thebeardedtrio.com. Leave some comments, leave some feedbacks. Tell me if you like Your Espresso Shot and if you'd like to see any changes. I'm open to changes. And like it seems, the Friends of the Park. Very political. So there we go. Thanks for listening. I'll hand you back to Coffee with Kenobi. Thanks. Goodbye.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard each sold separately from Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
For our first segment in the collector's news section, Dan, you recently had the opportunity to play Disney Infinity 3.0, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, well, let me ask you one question. What is Disney Infinity 3.0 and how does it work?
That's a very good question. It was something that when 2.0 came out, I think I've talked about this before, it was the Marvel characters, and you could get Captain America and Iron Man, Hulk and Thor and Spider-Man and all these amazing Marvel characters that we've grown up with, and I put money down to reserve it, and I just forgot about it. I never picked it up, and then I kind of got the feeling that Star Wars would come out, and then that was announced, and I thought, all right, I was going to wait and do this Disney Infinity thing. Basically, it's Skylanders sort of started this whole thing, but they sell these action figures, and we've talked about them a number of times on the show, and they're just exquisite in sculpt and detail. And you put them on this little base that the starter pack comes with, and the base lights up, and you put the figure on it, and that figure is in the game, and you are controlling that character. And the different characters, it's not like when you play with different video game characters, and they may look different, but they all pretty much do the same thing. There really is a difference in a progression of how these characters move and fight and defend, and their different abilities that they have. It's really, really stunning.
So there's actually a reason to collect them all in this situation.
There is, and I'll just kind of wax poetic on this, because I grew up loving video games, but as I have gotten older and I have my family, I play video games much, much less than I have when I was younger. Or if I did play, it would be sports games. But this is the kind of Star Wars game, this is the kind of video game that I can get into. I mean, I love it. It's so much fun. I've probably had 3 or 4 different sessions, and I'll look at the clock, and I'll be after midnight, and I have to teach the next day, and I'll think, what was I doing? How did time get away from me? That's how much fun it is. It's like that Christmas feel. When the starter pack comes with Ahsoka Tano and Anakin Skywalker, and it has a Twilight of the Republic playset, and you're basically playing through the Clone Wars, essentially, and through the prequels, but mostly the Clone Wars. And there are a number, it's got different specific missions that they guide you through, and it's very user-friendly. There's a little gold meter, and as you get closer and closer to your target, it counts down to zero so you know where you're going. You can do that. You can also do a bunch of little side missions. It's like Grand Theft Auto, but it's G-rated, and you have a lightsaber, right?
Okay, so there's a storyline that you're playing through, correct?
There is a storyline that you're playing through if you want to. That is the actual individual little game sets that you can do. But the big draw for Disney Infinity is that it has something called Toy Box Mode. And there's this little hub when the game starts, and there's these little plastic pieces. At first, I wasn't sure how to get the Twilight of the Republic started. And then I looked at the package again, and there's this little set that has Darth Maul's lightsaber and just a Jedi lightsaber, and it's clear and plastic, and you put it on the top of the base. There's three little spots. Two spots are for figures, because you can play two at a time if you want to. It's a split screen. And there's something at the top where you put on, and that is basically your cartridge, if you will. And that takes you through that. So you can play the game set that you have, or you can go right in the toy box mode. In toy box mode, you create the game. You create the background. You can change the music. You can do something with the sky. You can create the villains that you fight, the vehicles that are in it, the different little elements. And the big draw besides doing that, which is pretty exciting in its own way, and each character has a little paintbrush that you can create and do, is that you can put... This is where you can have like Spider-Man fighting Darth Vader or Buzz Lightyear interacting with C-3PO, and you can just do all kinds of amazing things. Like, you basically get to write your own films, your own movies, your own toy box. I mean, it's really, really cool. And it honestly, for a guy in his early 40s, it was a little overwhelming, but in a good way. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand completely. I just recently got Super Mario Maker for my Wii.
Oh, wow.
And it's sort of the same thing. It's so amazing. There's so many things you can do with it. I find myself just playing through other people's levels rather than trying to build my own, because it's just so overwhelming that I don't even know where to start. So I completely understand.
It gets that. There's a lot that goes into it. I mentioned earlier, when I started playing, I was using Anakin, and I was using Ahsoka, and I was using Yoda, and they are amazing and powerful, and they are quick. And then Kanan is rapidly becoming my favorite character, period, not only in Star Wars, but just in fiction in general for myriad reasons.
Wow.
But I started to use Kanan, and he's cool, and you push R2 on. I was playing for the PS4, by the way. You push R2, and he uses his gun. If you push triangle, he uses his lightsaber. So you've got both. But he's a little bit slower than Yoda. He's still powerful, but doesn't have the same impact. And then I used Ezra, and he was even slower than Kanan. But it wasn't a bad thing. It was more like, hey, if you use Ezra, you can believe he's not going to be as powerful as Yoda or Anakin. And I think that's the way that it should be. Add to the authenticity of this game. And another thing I want to say with it is that it very much reminds me of kind of the... If you are looking for a feel and a description, then I would look no further than the Lego games. Like the Star Wars Lego games or the Indiana Jones Lego games, things of that nature. It very much has that kind of feel where it's not linear, but there's definitely places that you need to go to advance, and they guide you to where you need to. You can get in different vehicles and ships. You can fly into space using the Jedi Starfighter. You can go on Tatooine and get in a land speeder. You can ride any different vehicles or ships that you find. There are certain modes where your main job is to get on a turret and to shoot down TIE fighters. And the controls are not particularly intuitive, at least for me, when it came to that. But once I figured it out, it was tremendous fun. It's just fun to use a lightsaber. There's some force push things you can do. And then you get little bonuses. You collect different... When you kill villains and they, you know, disintegrate or explode or whatever, they don't actually die because they can rematerialize. But you get these little blue sparks and purple sparks that you can add to your force abilities. Or if you don't have a force character, like I was using Sabine. And Disney was kind enough to send me a number of these figures, as well as the starter pack. And they also sent something that's coming out very soon called Toy Box Takeover Expansion. I wasn't sure what this was. On the box, it shows Marvel, Pixar, and Star Wars. And I thought, all right, I'm going to try this because we're going to be talking about it on the show. I put this in, and I think that was more fun than the starter pack for me, because basically I was going through what appeared to be Pirates of the Caribbean, but I was Kanan, and I was Yoda. And the whole crux is that Syndrome from The Incredibles, he took this magic wand of Merlin's, who's in the Sword and Stone film, of course,
right,
in the old Disney ones in the late 60s, early 70s. and you have to get it back, and he's controlled the toy box, and you've got different characters that you fight from the different Disney films and the Pixar films and all those things, and you go through these different lands and sets, and it's phenomenal. It is so much fun. It reminds me of the old, remember the old game Gauntlet?
Yes.
The old classic game. It's like that, but on crack with lightsabers. And it's just tremendous fun. Honestly, I would buy a system just to get the Toy Story Takeover, the Toy Box Takeover expansion pack, because it's great. And I wanted to see what would happen if during gameplay, if I just took Yoda off the base and put on Kanan or put on Mickey Mouse or whoever else, and you don't miss a beat. All of a sudden, one character disappears, another one materializes, and you're just back in business.
That's so cool.
It really, really is.
So, if you were playing a level and you came to a point where you needed the abilities of another character, you could just switch them out, get over whatever obstacle, and put the other character back on.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's what I did. Conversely, though, if Yoda loses his health, you can't use him unless you restart from the beginning point, the collector point. So then you have to find somebody. So you better have an Anakin or Ahsoka in your bullpen, or Obi-Wan, because they send us him as well. And you just go with it, man. And it's really, really great. And you can adjust the settings of the villain to easy or hard or medium. And you'll be hooked, I can tell you that.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's I highly recommend it. It's great. December 18th, they're coming out with a Force Awakens set. Very, very soon they're coming out with an original trilogy set that comes with Luke and Leia. And again, the sculpts on these guys is great. I honestly can't recommend Disney Infinity 3.0 enough. It's maybe, I don't know if I want to say compared to the classic video games and arcades, but it's maybe the most fun Star Wars at-home video game I've ever played.
Ringing endorsement from Dan Z, everybody.
For our second collector's news story, we have Mark Von Ohlen back to join us from Topps, and we had such great response when you were on before, Mark, and it's always fun to talk to you. Not only are you passionate as a collector, but you're one of the driving forces behind the amazing things that are happening on Topps, so go ahead and let us know what's going on with the Galactic Connections.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time at Topps right now, and for Star Wars in general. So first of all, thanks for having me back, guys. It's very exciting.
Of course, thank you.
So we've got two really fun, awesome things happening right now. One in the trading card realm. We've got our Topps Journey to Star Wars The Force Awakens trading cards, which you guys have probably seen since Force Friday, have been on shelf in the mass retailers, like your Target, your Walmart, your Toys R Us, those places. The hobby version comes out on the 23rd of September, so just about now, which is super exciting. And the hobby version's got all the bells and whistles, like the autographs and the printing plates and the sketch cards and all the great parallels. It's a really exciting set.
You know what? And honestly, every time I've been to Target or Walmart or just going on my runs to find everything, I can never. They're always sold out. So
same
it's
here.
Good to know that they're out somewhere in the wild. We just have to keep hunting for them.
Yeah, I have yet to see any on shelves. That's how fast they're selling.
And I think part of it is fast sellout, which we're excited to hear about. And some of it was also slow rollout. So I think we were hit on both sides, where we got some of the SKUs on shelf in time for Force Friday, which we were very thankful for. And then the rest were flowing in a little bit later. So you probably saw the individual packs out on that Friday the 4th. And then the jumbo packs came out a little bit later. And I think the value boxes, which are a $20 item, that have, I believe, 10 packs in there, if I'm remembering correctly, plus a patch card, which is awesome because there are fantastic patches in the set. If you can find the value box in your local Target or Walmart, those are a great value because you get that patch card included. Those only hit the shelf this week. So those are on a pretty long delay, unfortunately. So we've been pushing out SKUs, like it seems like every week, and it's been all over the Facebook, like, where can I find them? They've just been moving out a little slower than we like, but the product itself, I think, is worth the wait.
Well, definitely based on the photos we've seen, I'm really intrigued by these patches, too. We've seen some amazing images of them.
Yeah, they're very cool looking. They're all from the Episode 7 look and feel of things. So you'll see that in the patch cards, there's Rey's speeder, there's a BB-8 patch, there's a Chewbacca patch, and the Chewbacca is from Episode 7. There's the Millennium Falcon. And we have all these different individual patches then matched up across various characters. So there's patches with Kylo Ren and Finn and Kylo's, or rather the TIE Fighter has one. It's 20 patch cards in total, with I believe it's 8 different patches embedded within.
When you were designing something like this, how much input do you and the designers have, and how much does Lucasfilm say, hey, we really like you to do this?
So we have a style guide that Lucas provides, I think, to all the licensees to see, like, what artwork is available. And especially right now, like, before the movie comes out on 12/18, you know, we don't really know who these characters are. We don't really know their stories, their motivations, but we have artwork and we have photography. So the patches actually came straight from the style guide. You might see them in other merchandise around, and I've already seen a couple things where it's like, oh, I think we have that trading card, but there it's just blown up on a lunchbox.
Yes.
So it's like the same montage image that I think a lot of the licensees are using. Us being in the trading card business, we need a lot of content. You know, our base set is 110 cards, and the back 30 are all from Force Awakens. So they're trailer grabs and they're montages. And then we've got, I think it's 72 inserts going into the Journey product. So there's a lot of content. But when it comes to designing something like a patch card, we take that artwork that's in the style guide, we'll translate it into a patch, we share the patches with Lucas, and they give approval to it, and then we pick an image that makes sense to put next to it. And all those images that you see are actually photo real. So some pictures are, I guess, photography, and some are illustration. And all of the images that we have next to the patches are photo real. They're great high-res beauty shots of all the new characters. And we got them very close to the launch of the product, where we swapped all of them out right at the end. It was like it was crazy over there at the office. But they look fantastic. I'm glad we made the swap.
Oh, outstanding. And Mark, I appreciate the care that you've taken to not reveal any spoilers in the cards that have been released so far, because, you know, yes. I want to know as little as possible in advance of the film. The original trading cards back in the late 70s, early 80s, tried to sort of tell the story of the film from card number one in the series to the last card in the series. Are there any plans to do that once the film has been released and the storyline is common knowledge, or are you going to continue the track that you're going on now?
Oh, absolutely. So think of the Journey set as your first in a trilogy. And we know that Star Wars loves its trilogies. Mm-hmm. So Journey to the Force Awakens, the intention is really to get you caught up on the first six films. So that's what the first 80 cards in the base set are. It's basically a retelling of Episode 1 through Episode 6, with sort of a special look at the character development. And if you flip on the back, you'll see, like, movie facts and behind the scenes, things that are reminiscent of the vintage cards that we've done in the past. And a lot of the inserts actually pick up the designs from Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. The base card, of course, is based on that 1977 Blue Starfield design that we had done on the very first set. So it's all just like a big vintage love fair. Like, it's just like everything we love about everything we've done before. It's a little self-congratulatory. I was joking with someone. I was like, man, this is everything top set. But the fans were really excited about that. And then those last 30 cards are really just the trailer grabs. So you'll see, like, the images that have been presented to us so far. And then with a little bit of additional content in the insert. So you'll see a lot of different characters, some of the vehicles, things like that. Some great montages, you know, those pictures from the style guide I had mentioned. So that's really part one. Part two, when the movie comes out on 12/18, which is actually called The Force Awakens Series 1, that product will be coming out on December 18th. We will tell the story of the film, but not the entire film. And that's just how it's going to be, I think, for everyone. You know, we're not allowed to give away the ending. I haven't seen the ending yet, and I won't spoil anything. We can't. There are some characters that will still be embargoed on 12/18.
Wow.
I know, which is crazy, right? But, you know, I think they want to be very protective. At the moment, I can tell you that I have a ton of images that are watermarked with our company name on it. So I have that horrifying moment of, God, if this ends up on the internet, we know where it came from, right?
Yes.
We're very protective with our firewalls and all that kind of stuff, and not bringing things home, and, you know, just being protective of the assets, because we don't want to spoil the film for anyone or give anything away.
So it's safe to say that you've seen more of the images in the film than the average everyday coffee drinker.
Oh, for sure. So that's one of the wonderful things about my job, and also one of the terrifying things about my job. You know, being a fan, I want to speculate. I want to be on the boards and engage in the conversation about who we think Rey and Finn and Kylo and Phasma are and all those types of things. And believe me now, like, I am past the point of being able to speculate about anything, because I could inadvertently be correct. And that's terrifying.
With great power comes great responsibility, right?
Right. So I'm just out of the conversation. My friends try to ask me things, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know a thing. You know, I know as much as I need to know to make the first wave of cards, which are going to hit, like I mentioned, on 12/18. So day and date is what everyone's referring to, day and date. 12/18 when the first wave comes out. And then we're going to do a series two in March. So that will then give the full story of the movie, including whatever the big reveal ending will be and, you know, images of characters that we can't show on 12/18, et cetera, sure. And a different set of inserts. And I'm actually working on planning that set right now. We're bringing the 12/18 product over the finish line right now in terms of just execution and preparing files and all that kind of boring stuff that, you know, once you create the product, now it's just, you know, printing the cards and making it happen. But we're really focused now on trying to make the second one really interesting and different while having not yet seen the movie. And that's tricky.
It sounds amazing. It really does. Just knowing that if I were you, and you probably had this as well, it's just such an amazing position to be in. There's a part of you that wants to kind of see it all for the first time in the theater, but knowing that you get to help drive the excitement for The Force Awakens is quite a blessing.
Oh, I'm loving it. I got to tell you, going to conventions, you know, we were at San Diego and we were at Celebration, just being able to engage with fans and talk to them about like our shared love of this property. And I think we're all fans first. Other licensees are the same way. I was talking to some of the Hasbro guys, because they were right across from us at San Diego, and we were just geeking out over Star Wars. You know, it's just one of those things that brings people together. And whether you're a mega fan or a light fan, like everyone knows the property. And everyone's got like a different thing they're super geeky about within it. Like at that time at San Diego, I was really excited about what was going to be happening in Rebels season two. You know, they had announced that Sam Witwer was coming back to voice the Emperor. And of course, the voice of Tarkin.
Stanton.
Steve Stanton. There we go. Sorry. It has been Tarkin for the back half of the season. And I'm dying to get that interaction between Tarkin and the Emperor. I want to see that happen.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing where we just haven't seen. Apparently, it's in the Tarkin book, so I need to read the book. That's on my list of things to do.
It's a great book.
I've heard nothing but good things, so I'm now, like, waiting for season two of Rebels to kick in, which is weeks away.
That's right. And, Mark, I would highly suggest the paperback version of Tarkin because Coffee with Kenobi's on the back of it.
Oh, right. You guys have a pull quote, don't you?
Yes, we do.
There's a version sitting on my coffee table on the stack of many things I need to get to for my actual, like, pleasure reading.
But sure.
If I'm home right now, I'm either, like, doing a podcast or working on collecting autographs for the upcoming sets, or I'm also working on Doctor Who, not to derail the Star Wars conversation, but I'm heavily engaged in all things Doctor Who at the moment, including rewatching several seasons to fully get back up to speed on things.
Well, that's cool. Before we let you go, I really want to ask about the Connections Collectible Trading Disc and Game, which we are running a promo on through the... Yeah. Thankfully, Mark was kind enough to reach out to us, and we're doing that. And just to let everyone know and remind everyone, if you want to enter, go ahead and tweet at us and put the hashtag TopCWKGiveaway and mention Tops as well, and that will give you one entry. If you put a review on iTunes with the same hashtag TopCWKGiveaway, you get two entries. So you have three possibilities to win. It's an amazing set, which Mark is going to tell us all about. And you have until October 5th to win this incredible package. So, Mark, tell us about it.
Yeah, Top Star Wars Galactic Connections is our new collectible. It's a trading disc, so a 3D collectible, a little different from our cards. It's got 75 different characters to collect. And what you guys are giving away is a 14-disc starter pack. And the starter pack comes with the 14 discs I mentioned, and one of them being an ultra rare, and I'll take you guys through the rarity and all that stuff in a minute. And it also comes with the game mat, the rules, and the checklist. And this is something really different from what we've been doing in the past. You know, we're a trading card company, but we also dabble in collectibles. And this is a pretty new format for us because it's not just a collectible, it's also a game. So you can have a lot of different fun with this in a few different ways. And it works great for kids because the game is really easy and intuitive. And it also works for the super fans out there who know their Star Wars knowledge, because there's a component to that as well. So there's a lot of different moving pieces that can get people excited about.
Wow. Well, it's the images we have on our website, the discs themselves are really, really cool. What's like the strategy to a game like this?
Yeah, so I should mention that you know, there are 75 characters, and each of them have four different attributes on them. So you'll see it's a hexagonal disc, and on four of the sides, there are lines indicating a power level. So there's fighting ability, there's intelligence, there's honor, and deceit. So those are the four different attributes. And what you do is you build yourself a deck. So you collect your favorite characters, or whichever ones you think are the most powerful or whatever you think would help you win the game. And you start with 5 discs, and you have an opponent, and you lay your discs out on the game mat or a board, any kind of flat surface, it doesn't really matter. And your discs all face you, and then you put yours into the board, but you have to basically battle your opponent based on those attributes. So you can put down like Luke Skywalker, and he's got a certain ability for intelligence, and it needs to be higher than the character you're going against. And this is really tricky to explain, I think, in audio, as people are, if you're trying to like follow along, it's hard to follow. I'll make sure I give these guys our links to the videos where you can actually see how to play. It's very quick. It's like 2 minutes, but it takes you through the entire gameplay and explains all the different rules to it. And it's really fun. It's really well done, too. And then we have another video that explains all the different rarity, because we've got all these different colors of discs and sticker types like foils and ultra-rare versions to collect and chase.
That sounds awesome, too. Yeah, please send that to us, and we will happily put that in our show notes. And Mark, always, always great to hear what's going on from Tops, and we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule with everything that's going on to promote these amazing products. Thank you so much. And where can people get in touch with you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I love coming to do the show. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Darth Von Olin. And you can also follow our official Tops card. Tops Digital and Tops Cards. And then our Facebook page is facebook.com official Top Star Wars. And that's where I post every day about all of the upcoming products. If you visit now, it's all about Journey to the Force Awakens. So you'll see the current checklist and all the different images of the products. And we'll be doing a giveaway for the hobby version of the product by the end of next week.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll definitely be on the lookout for that. So please check out Tops and Tops Digital and all the great things they have going on. Pick up a pack and... hey, while you're at it, tweet us some of your favorite-looking cards because they are amazing to look at. Mark, thank you again so much for being back on Coffee with Kenobi.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes. You've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina. Trade with your friends and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 44 is Attack of the Clones. Scott Murray of Assembly of Geeks returns as we continue our analysis of the 6 existing Star Wars films. What are some of the more powerful moments in Episode 2? What particular themes or motifs speak to you? How do you feel about Anakin and Padme's growing relationship? And how about the characters introduced? We are always happy to be joined by Scott Murray and to hear his insights. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be back with you.
Thank you. It's of course, always a pleasure to have you on. And we're going to talk about a film that, again, another polarizing prequel, but maybe for different reasons than some of the others. So let's just start, gentlemen, with our overall impressions of the film and how it fits into the saga. And why don't we start with you, Scott?
It is my least favorite in the group. And when I say that, it doesn't necessarily mean that I despise it or something. As I've said, I can still watch them. With clones, there are scenes where I might fast forward.
Oh, wow.
Through some of them on occasion, or I might be tempted to at least. But, I mean, it still has some of my favorite scenes in it. I've always been a big fan of the fight between Jango and Obi-Wan in the rain. I think it's a good film in the sense that, you know, we had all wondered what the Clone Wars were and what it all meant. And I guess from a kind of a simplistic point of view, it was good to see what that meant. You know, we'd heard so many references to it as early as, you know, A New Hope. And it was just kind of cool to see what the Clone Wars were and what they how they formed and who was involved and what happened. And to me, that's probably the most significant thing, one of the most significant things that comes out of it. And of course, that's, you know, also kind of the beginning of some of the things that lead to the Jedi Council falling apart in Revenge of the Sith. But yeah, so it's an okay film. I, you know, like I said, I can still watch it, but, and
you've got two pretty cool memories of it too, though, don't you?
I do. One of them is that I, went to my very first Star Wars celebration, as we were heading into, see episode 2 in Indianapolis. And, I was so excited about going. My wife and I both went. And I didn't really know what to expect other than there was going to be a lot of cool stuff to get, which is kind of one of the things that I'm always looking for. But I remember that, you know, this was their second one, so it wasn't as organized as some of the later ones were. They were just coming out of that one in Denver, you know, that was out in the rain and everything that I'd read so much about. And there was still a lot of people there, and people were doing their best to corral folks. So we wanted to get into opening ceremony. So my wife got in line, and we were in line for a while. So we both got a little hungry. So I said, all right, just stay here in line, and I will go get food and drinks. And I had to go down these stairs and order food, and it took some time. And then so I'm holding two drinks, one in each hand, and then I've got a tray of food over the top of my arms, trying to balance all this. And I start working my way up the stairs, and all of a sudden I've got a mob around me trying to get to last minute opening ceremonies, and they cut us off. And so I'm like standing on the staircase for like 10 to 15 minutes, balancing this tray and holding these drinks, not even knowing if I'm going to get in. And by this time I know my wife has gotten in. And finally, at the last minute, they let another small group go, and I got in the tail end of that and got in. And so we're there. And this was when the movies, the first Spider-Man movie came out with Tobey Maguire. And they had a guy from Lucasfilm come out talking about marketing and said, you know, we want to be able to compete with all the Spider-Man marketing, want to hear your ideas. Before we do that, let me just show you the latest Spider-Man trailer. And we're going, why are they going to show us? I mean, I understand the point, but why are they going to show this? And remember back then, the way those trailers started was these blue letters popped on the screen. It said, this summer, go for the ultimate spin with America's, you know, favorite superhero or something like that. And it would be Spider-Man. So it opened up the exact same way. This summer, go for the ultimate spin with America's favorite hero. And then boom. And all of a sudden it faded up, and it was Yoda.
Wow.
And and Yoda lighting up his saber for the first time. Nobody in that room had seen that before, and everybody just went nuts, obviously, very much like when they saw the trailer for Force Awakens this past time. And my wife was on the other end of the room going, oh, my God, I can't believe Scott's missing this. But fortunately, I was there, and it was an incredible moment for to be able to see that for the first time. And you can actually, if you search it right, you can find somebody that was in that room and videotaped it and have it on YouTube when that entire room saw Yoda fight with a lightsaber for the first time. And you want the other story as well?
Yeah, unless you want to save it for later. It's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, so I saw Attack of the Clones when it hit IMAX and got the big poster with Yoda on it that says size matters not. And back then, for whatever reason, when they were testing this whole thing, you know, this is back when they were just kind of playing with it. We had seen like Apollo 13 and Matrix Reloaded in the IMAX theater because they were trying this stuff out. And evidently the problem at one point in time is they couldn't fit the whole film into the projector.
Yeah, there's so, like a 2-hour and 45 minute or 2-hour limit they had on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Clones came, they had to cut portions of it out to fit. And I know some people aren't going to like me for saying this, but fortunately to me, a lot of it was the romantic dialogue scenes with Anakin and Padme. And it took a lot. They took a chunk of that out and it made it a better movie. And it made it a better movie as well because it just got to things sooner. And I guess that kind of ties back to what I was saying about some of my favorite moments actually being in the film is I found as I saw it a second or third time, I found myself anxious for those moments and felt like we were dragging to get there. I thought all the conversations on Kamino were taking too long and then cutting back to other things and Anakin and Padme talking when really I wanted to see Obi-Wan and Jango fight in the rain. And it just felt like it took forever to get there. But this cut got there sooner, and that IMAX presentation to me ended up being a better film for what was cut.
Wow. And my experience with it has been similar to Scott's, not that I saw it in Indianapolis, saw a trailer in Indianapolis or anything, but I have kind of the same reaction to it. This is actually my second to least favorite Star Wars film. It was my least favorite until I watched The Phantom Menace with subtitles. We'll talk more about that the next time we have Scott on. But I do love the look of this film. I love the colors. I love the way it's shot, the art direction, the set design, everything. Love that about it. It's very much eye candy to me. But and I love, there are elements of it that I love. I love the storyline with Obi-Wan playing detective. I love Kamino. I love that environment. I love the Kaminoans. I love that we see so many different worlds in this film, but the dialogue is awful. The romantic dialogue to me sounds like dialogue that was written by someone who has never been in love, but thinks they know what it's like.
That's
said that
fair.
From the beginning. And yes. The story itself is great. I really enjoy the story, but the dialogue and the way they get there just does not work for me. But that being said, there, as we'll talk, there are still very many elements in this film that I do absolutely love. I feel like the sum is not greater than the whole of its parts.
There you go. This film is something that when I talked about my experiences on our coffee chat with Dennis Keithley, as far as my reactions when I left Phantom Menace, which we'll again talk about when Scott's on very soon. But with this one, when I left, I looked at my friends when the film was over and I thought, that was awesome. That was awesome. Star Wars is back. I don't have to worry about the next film being anxious about how it's going to affect me after I come out of the theater the first time. And I really enjoyed it. I particularly love the Jango and Obi-Wan fight, like Scott mentioned, because we get to see a bounty hunter actually fighting a Jedi in a way that I think we've already pictured and played with our Kenner action figures. That was great. I really like a lot of the new characters, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And there are particular moments in this film that blow me away and are completely Star Wars for me. That's not to say it's a perfect film. It is not a perfect film. There are certain things that are less than favorable in my eyes. But overall, I really, really enjoy it. I think it fits in the saga well because you have to have Anakin. It's 10 years after Phantom Menace, so a lot has happened in the galaxy. Let's talk about the more powerful moments in Episode 2. And I'll just start with mine. I think the ones we've talked about are powerful. The end scene when Yoda appears and we realize he's going to fight, I was amazing for Episode 2 and being spoiler-free. I didn't even go out and buy the figures until after I saw the movie, which is unheard of for me, completely unheard of. So when Yoda got that lightsaber out and he started to fight and flip around and go to battle with Count Dooku, I literally stood up in that theater and I clapped and I cheered and I screamed like Michael Jordan was making a comeback against the Knicks in 1992. I was so excited and so happy that a movie could make me feel that way, especially a Star Wars movie. But to me, the most powerful moment in Episode 2 is the scene where Anakin goes and finds his mother and she dies in his arms. And the music crescendos and the look on Hayden Christensen's face. Say what you will about Hayden Christensen as an actor or Anakin Skywalker or what have you, but he does rage and anger and intensity as good as anybody who isn't named Robert De Niro. And I thought that scene was wonderful. Every time I see that, the goosebumps and the rage and the serious foreshadowing of who he's going to become, I thought they completely knocked that out of the park.
Well, and let me say, I think, and I've said this from the beginning, people who knock Hayden Christensen as an actor take for granted how difficult it is to make the dialogue that he had to say work. When I was talking about how awful I think the dialogue is in this film, I think it hamstrings all of the actors.
Oh, me too.
I feel like Hayden Christensen's performance in this film is one of the best in all of the Star Wars films. I really do. I think it's one of the most nuanced. You know, other than the first scene where he's complaining in Padme's quarters about Obi-Wan being overly critical, and the scene where he's throwing a fit after he kills the Tusken Raiders, saying, you know, I should be able to save everybody. Those two notwithstanding, I think the rest of his work in the film is impeccable. I think it's exquisite acting.
I agree, especially in those two moments you put. I agree with that as well. Scott, what about you? Some of the more powerful moments?
If I may.
You may. You may.
I know it's not necessarily a powerful moment, but per se, or at least arguably, for all of the things that, you know, were just kind of underwhelming with when Trisha Barr would appreciate me saying with Sam Jackson.
Right.
Yes.
in the prequel trilogy.
It didn't really flip your whopper.
Yeah, it didn't flip my whopper. I do love it when he shows up on Geonosis and puts that saber to Jango's throat and says, this party's over. Yeah.
That's the only Sam Jackson moment in the entire saga.
I love it. You know, I mean, some big Sam Jackson fans expected him to say a certain profanity afterwards, but perhaps. But even after him jumping down there and finally lighting that thing up and showing what he can do with that, that was a good moment. And yeah, I mean, the fight with Yoda, I remember listening to George talk about how they went about doing that. And it was really interesting to me because he brought up things that, you know, I think show, you know, some of his strengths as a filmmaker, because he said, you know, when you consider who he was in the original trilogy and, you know, how people see him, there was actually a way that if they didn't actually think it through, it could have looked kind of silly. You know, having this little guy in a lightsaber jumping, you know, running around and swinging a saber. And that's when they toyed with the idea of what about if he just started to leap and flip and do all the stuff that he did. And it worked, you know, because it, but if something like that wasn't done exactly right or done a certain way, it could also look kind of goofy. And it was interesting listening to him talk about, you know, the thought process they went through to make sure that when Yoda did finally fight, that it was done in a way that continuously looked cool, like everything that Yoda does. And yeah, I think the scenes with Jango are great. I even like the pursuit in the asteroid field a lot. Would have actually liked to have seen that last a little longer.
And the sound effect of that explosion was exquisite.
One of the best, the lack of sound. Yeah.
Yes.
Amazing. The first time I saw it, I thought, is there something wrong with the sound in the theater? And then the second time I thought, okay, no, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
And that was a highlight for me, along with, like I said, I loved all of the stuff on Kamino with Obi-Wan. The Jango Fett fight scene was fun, but I've always, even as a kid, always been more drawn to the character moments rather than the battles. And so that's what I was looking for from the film, and we didn't get that many that really landed for me, again, due to the dialogue. But the scene of Anakin, you know, with his mother, especially hits me now that you know, my own mother is gone. Hits me a little harder now even than it did at the time. And that is one of the sort of the motifs in the film, is this, you know, this loss of, I don't know if loss of innocence is the right thing, but we are, you know, last time we saw Anakin, he was this wild-eyed, bright-eyed 9-year-old, and now he's, you know, sort of the world is starting to break him down. So what are some of the particular themes or motifs that stand out to the two of you for this film?
Well, the other thing I was going to mention too about that moment that I agree is also very powerful when we see Anakin finally kind of snap for the first time and kill all those Tusken Raiders. What did you all think about the really kind of, I think, nice touch they added to that scene that I think just kind of increased the emotion of the whole thing, of Qui-Gon's voice?
That ties into actual different themes and motifs in this overall film that I love. There's, I think, one of the most important things to come out of episode 2, and it goes all the way back to the Odyssey. And one of the things that Odysseus has to teach his son Telemachus to struggle with and to overcome is anger. and how anger can poison your mind and completely changes your ideas and affects who you are. It can make you a completely different person. And we know what happens to Anakin. We know who he becomes, and then he literally becomes like a different psychological being. He doesn't learn that moment of controlling his anger. He lets it get the best of him. And whatever trauma, when you experience trauma to the degree that Anakin Skywalker does, that is what bridges the gap to episode 3 and makes the turn more believable, because we've seen that the Tusken Raiders, they're not necessarily alien, but they're human. And it's presumable and believable that Anakin knows this. He kills men and women and children. And his burgeoning girlfriend, his relationship with her future fiance, she listens to him and she's sort of there. And I'm sure there's a lot behind the scenes, hopefully, that happens to explain what happens with those two as far as that goes. But that thing with Qui-Gon starts to yell Anakin, that's amazing, because that's really the only time in the prequels that we see Qui-Gon go across the void and to try to reach out with his voice. Of course, we see what happens in the Clone Wars and the Yoda arc in season 5. But I think that's an incredibly important moment and shows the gravitas of the situation. So I'm going to go with that. That theme for me is anger and the importance of trying to manage your emotions.
I think it was just from a fan standpoint, I think it was enjoyable to, you know, get to see Anakin in the light that we'd always heard about. I mean, I really think that is a one of the things I think the prequels do give us is at least a chance to see things that back when we saw the original trilogy, we'd only heard of and never got a chance to actually see. Although I will say that, you know, I really wish we'd gotten to see a little more heroics out of Anakin, very much like we got to see perhaps in the Clone Wars animated series, because I found myself wanting to pull for him and wanting to see him be the, you know, the great Jedi that we'd heard that he was. And I'm still not entirely sure sometimes that we got enough of that in the films, but maybe we got it more in the animated series. I also think it's interesting the parallels between him and Luke from the standpoint that they were both kind of brought into this at a young age, obviously Anakin a little younger, but they went through very similar things in the sense that, you know, you've heard fans talk about how Luke was whiny and how Anakin was whiny, but, you know, they were teenagers.
Right, they came by it honestly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That wanted to prove that they were, you know, much more mature adults than they really were and had to prove it to the world. And you just see one go one down one path and one going the other for different reasons. And I think, you know, it's interesting to see in Clones, as far as themes are concerned, just the growing number of things that happen to Anakin that are going to contribute to him eventually turning. The loss of his mother being one of them, continuously thinking that his own mentor and the Jedi Council don't really believe in him to the degree that he thinks they should have the kind of faith that he wants them to have. And then, like we talked about on Assembly of Geeks this past week, you know, that a lot of times when he comes to them and says, I'm having these dreams, I'm having these problems, I'm fearful that I'm going to lose, you know, somebody else like my mom. And the advice he gets is, well, just forget about it and don't miss them. You know, so, yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of I think that's really kind of the theme is we see someone who has every potential to be a heroic hero. And there's just way too many things that happen that, you know, eventually just overcome his ability to go down the path that Luke chose.
Was an example of all nature and no nurture.
Hmm. Oh, I like that. That's good.
Yeah. You like that? Yeah. along with that, you know, we talked a little bit, or I talked a little bit before about how the romantic scenes didn't really work for me, and Scott apparently didn't work for you even less. But how did you guys feel about the way that Anakin and Padme's relationship was presented in the film?
Well, gosh, That's a hard one, isn't it? Because I agree with you that it's not authentic, and Lucas has very much been vocal about saying, look, I care about how the film looks. I want it to be beautiful, and it was. The fireplace scene was shot beautifully. The lighting was amazing. Lucas designed Natalie Portman's dress. Do with that what you will. But I think it's the most challenging aspect of the prequel trilogy is their relationship, particularly in this film. And then the balcony scene in episode 3, I would say, but that's more of an editing thing, as we've talked about before. Yeah, exactly. And Brian Young has a wonderful definition or defense of their relationship. I like that they're together. I think their chemistry is, I give it a probably a C+ as far as that goes. Look, I'm married. I'm in love. I know how you talk to someone that you love, and there are ups and downs to be sure. But this isn't ring true. There's not a lot of verisimilitude in this. That being said, obviously it has to happen. There are nice moments there. I do like them together on screen. And I do believe that there's actual passion there. But I understand the criticisms of this particular relationship in episode 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think where it starts for me is I can just say I appreciate what they were trying to accomplish and everything that they were looking to do. And that includes, you know, the Across the Stars theme that John Williams did for this thematic element in the film as well. I mean, I like
beautiful.
That.
Yeah.
I will say
it is.
That was my favorite. I may like that even better than Duel of the Fates, and that's saying something. But I do really like that particular cue.
Our and Star Wars prom, that was the theme song that I had.
We played it at our wedding.
Yeah, cool. We'll see. There you go.
And
thankfully, yours has worked out better than theirs.
Yeah, I started saying ours turned out a little different. You know, it might have been Celebration 2 in Indianapolis when Carrie Fisher was on stage, and I think we went to it, and I think that was the time where what she said at one point in time. I think it was her or someone else that said, George, nobody talks like this. And George's response was, well, I do. And yes. That's what I always think of when I hear this dialogue. And the thing is, I don't like to, you know, I think it's become way too popular amongst fandom to bash these films to the point where it's gotten ridiculous, you know, so many years later. So I try not to sound like I'm doing the same thing. And you know, I want to give the dialogue in that area the benefit of the doubt, because on the one hand, I look at it and go, people don't talk like that. But then the one caveat that I try to give it is, you know, when kids are in love, they say all kinds of over-emotive things that adults don't say. And I try to give it that angle to give it the benefit of the doubt, but it still just doesn't seem to pass it for me. But I agree with the other things you're saying as far as, you know, the two of them.
I think that's actually fair. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
It is. I think you're onto something there, Scott. And I think there is something to be said for that. But at the same time, it doesn't sound when a teenager says it, you believe that they believe that it's true. It's like Bobby Hill in King of the Hill says, I hear the words you're saying and I believe that you believe they're important. But it just doesn't ring true from the actors. This is the one moment in the film where Hayden Christensen and Natalie Portman both just really, I feel like, can't make it work. And the other thing is, I've heard people talk about the scene, you know, immediately following where he kills all the Tusken Raiders. A lot of people feel like that is the scene where she really falls in love with him because she has a thing. They think she has a thing for the bad boys.
Yeah, right.
And I feel like it's
almost
less
like a weird Florence Nightingale thing.
Yeah, I think it's more that. I think it's more, this is someone who needs my help. Her heart goes out to him because she sees how much he's hurting. And I think it's more to do with that. And I feel like that could have been explored in a lot more detail. Again, I've said this before, the problem I have with the prequels is that all the most interesting portions of the story take place in between the films. The movies only tell me the parts of the story that I'm the least interested in learning. I wanted to see more about how this relationship came to pass, how they figured out that, you know, they wanted to get married, that this was the right thing to do. You know, sure. I wanted to see that conversation.
Well, and of course, as we've said many times also, Clone Wars does a wonderful job of fleshing a lot of this stuff out and adding some depth and nuance to these characters. And there's only a certain amount of time to tell a 2-hour story when you only have every 3 years you tell that 2 hours of what's going on. So it's definitely tricky, and we're all Monday morning quarterbacks when it comes to these films for sure. And I do agree with you, Scott. I like how you eliminated this conversation with the idea that not every teenager and teenage relationship, it's awkward for them when they're talking about these kind of things. And that actually makes sense, because I hear that kind of stuff a lot when I'm in the halls at school.
Yes.
or things like that. So when you put it that way, it does resonate a little bit better. It's still not a strength, but it does make more sense. If there's nothing more to talk about with their relationship, and feel free, gentlemen, to say whatever you would like to discuss about it. But I do want to talk about the new characters that we meet in this film, and I'm particularly talking about Count Dooku, Jango Fett. There are a number of new characters that we really get more acquainted with in these films, and how do you like how they add to the saga? You could even say Yoda's a new character in this, because really we have never seen Yoda this way.
Well, the character that stuck out to me the most, and this is maybe silly to some people, but Dexter Jetster is the one that stuck out to me the most. And when the movie came out, he was the one that I thought, oh, what a cool character design. What a cool character. Now, you get some distance between it and you realize just how fake and cartoony the effects look. But I still like the character, and he's one that I would kind of like to see more about. I would like kind of like to see a mini series about Dexter Jetster, like just what kind of life has he lived? Because you get the feeling that he hasn't always been a short order cook at a greasy spoon on Coruscant.
Because of his connections with Obi-Wan, for
right.
sure.
Yeah, and because he knows about the clones and
the Derps.
The Derg, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? You mentioned earlier that one of your favorite things about Episode 2 is the Obi-Wan gumshoe angle. I actually think I didn't like that. That took me too much out. I feel like that was too much of a nod to American Graffiti and that time frame to such a degree that part always didn't feel like Star Wars to me.
Well, I don't like, you want a cup of Jawa juice, because is that juice made from Jawas, or I want to know what that is before I give her my order.
Well, what's funny is I played Star Wars Galaxies for about 5 years, and that was something people often ordered in the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Really?
Jawa juice?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before Episode 2 came out?
I think so.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. Maybe it's a little nod to the expanded universe.
I think so.
Well, this is also where you meet Aayla Secura as well.
Yeah.
And Zam Wessel, the shapeshifter.
That's right.
Who, at the beginning of the movie.
Was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to mention Zam because, between her and Jango, I mean, I thought those were two consistent elements in Star Wars that, once again, the bounty hunters are just really cool. And, Count Dooku, I didn't always know what to make of Count Dooku. I mean, First off, I wish he had a better name.
No kidding. You're telling me that there was nobody who was brave enough to tell George Lucas, you realize this guy's name is a synonym for poop.
Yeah. It seemed like they were trying to tell a deeper story with him. And I didn't, I remember watching it, not completely being able to wrap my head around it, other than he just was a turncoat. I mean, he just used to be a Jedi. Now he's on the other side. And it was Christopher Lee, and Christopher Lee brought his usual amount of gravitas to that character. I also think about how cool it was to see, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. And I thought Kleeg Lars was kind of an interesting character as well that we meet in the story. So, yeah, there were definitely some interesting characters come out of that. And, yeah, Yoda as this... as this leader, combat general, was quite interesting. And it was very exciting to see that lightsaber fight for the first time. And then as we rolled into Revenge of the Sith, everybody wanted to see the lightsaber fight between him and Darth Sidious, and we got that. It was interesting. Each film, the rumors that would come out, we would go to these, other conventions, and I remember hearing the first time about, Yoda might fight with a lightsaber, and there might be this character named Grievous who has six arms with sabers in them and all that sort of thing. And then finally seeing him on screen, and Yoda had a big part of things that people were anticipating going into that second movie.
I think I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we did get quite a few new characters, and the thing that strikes me the most about it is all the missed opportunities with those characters. Because General Grievous, you look at the character design and everything about him, he should have been this really amazing, awesome, menacing character, and all he ever does is run away. And yeah. Jango Fett, we meet this guy who's supposed to be, you know, the greatest bounty hunter in the universe, gets his head chopped off at the end of the movie. And, you know,
by one of the most powerful Jedi in the universe, though.
No, I get that. I just, you know, sort of, and Count Dooku, again, this, you've got a great actor in Christopher Lee playing him, and all he does is run away.
Which kind of makes me think about, you know, what did you all think about the combat scenes in this? Like, you know, I mean, I think it doesn't get much better than the end of Phantom Menace in the lightsaber fight.
No, but you're also talking about a martial artist, too.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I look at the fight between Anakin and Count Dooku after Obi-Wan's been injured, and you watch that fight, and there's a lot of that fight was like medium close-ups, and you just see the saber go back and forth on the screen versus actually seeing the combat involved. I found that lightsaber fight was a little underwhelming as opposed to what it could have been after Yoda left.
I had a lot of trouble following what was going on and telling who, you know, yeah.
I guess I'm more of an apologist for this because I love the close-ups because the way their faces are reflected off of the lights of the blade, which they couldn't really do stuff like that so much with the original trilogy. I thought that spoke to a deeper narrative that this wasn't really about a duel, but it was more about the duel within Anakin's own personal psyche. And he's tasting the dark side in ways that he never has before, actually dueling a Sith Lord. And I think there's something to be said about that. I mean, whether it's midichlorians restoring or whatever you want to go with that, I found that fascinating. And I love that scene. The thing I don't like about the combat in Episode 2 is when all the Jedi are fighting all the battle droids before they perfected it on Clone Wars, it felt very much like they had giant sparklers and they were waving it, fireflies in the air all the time, deflecting those. I didn't feel any danger or scope to that. I mean, there was a lot going on, but it didn't really mean much to me. It didn't resonate to me. I do want to talk briefly about Count Dooku, one of my top five favorite characters in all of Star Wars.
Really?
I think he is.
Defend your answer, sir.
Easily. I think he's fascinating. I think, again, Clone Wars does a lot for him. He's evil. He's horribly, horribly evil. If you've read Dark Disciple, we see a little more about him as well. And I think he becomes a tragic figure by what happens in Episode 3, but this is about Episode 2. And I like the way he tries to court Obi-Wan. And I like the psychological bend that he has, and he's got this class to him. His lightsaber is amazing, one of the coolest designs that they've done with all the lightsaber hilts. And there have been a lot of great ones over the years. I find him really, really intriguing. I really like Count Dooku a lot.
Well, and you're absolutely right. He is someone who is driven by his ideals. You know, he really is a true believer. He's just believing in the wrong thing and ultimately is duped, as everyone is. You know, you make a deal with the devil, you're never going to come out on the winning side.
Right.
And so I do get that. So I was just joking. He is a very interesting character, but I really top five.
I love him. Yeah. I've always been drawn to him. I think he's classy. He's almost like a classic Bond villain, which is of course not so ironic considering who he played in The Man with the Golden Gun. But there's just something about him because you literally are going from the opposite of Darth Maul. And Count Dooku has more psychological weight and resonance to him.
Well, and just talking of characters from the film, I wanted to mention one who is a holdover from Episode 1. Actually, my favorite moment in the film is when Anakin goes back to Tatooine and he goes to Watto's shop to ask him about his mother. Mm-hmm. And Watto doesn't recognize him at first. And then when he does, the animators did an impeccable job, an absolutely amazing job. This is some of the best character animation I've ever seen. You can actually see him recognize Anakin. You can see the realization wash over him, and you can see his reaction. It's absolutely amazing. It is acting. And I don't know how they did it. I don't know why they weren't able to replicate it more often. But that one moment just blew my mind then, and it blows my mind every time I see it. Because when he says, he looks at him and he says, Annie, little Annie, you see it. You see everything rush back to him.
You sure sprouted.
Yes. Well, and nice. Well, and even the stubble that Watto was sporting in his cute little hat, I like Watto quite a bit.
I like Watto too.
That was neat. In the interest of time, it seems more and more, and I don't know why this is a shock to anyone. It's certainly not to me anyway. We could talk about all these films for more than one episode, and we're going to do just that as time goes on, of course. But do we have any last-minute thoughts about Attack of the Clones before we hear more about what Scott's got going on at Assembly of Geeks?
I'm glad that it was not the last film in the prequel series. One thing I didn't mention is when the film came out, I didn't even realize it was opening the night that it opened. Figured it out that afternoon. Wow. And my girlfriend and I went to a midnight showing. I was living in Jackson, Mississippi at the time, and there were maybe 30 people there to see it. One of the local news stations had sent a crew out, and they were a little surprised and a little disappointed that there weren't more people to talk to before the film. And I remember after we left, I remember having the opposite reaction of Dan, being sort of underwhelmed and thinking, well, it wasn't awful, but it wasn't the leap forward in quality that I was hoping after episode one.
Yeah, it's interesting. We actually scrounged up the funds, and my wife helped a lot because that's the kind of wife she is. And she knew that I was just totally anxious to see this thing, and we actually scrounged up the funds to see a charity screening.
Oh, cool.
In Plano a few days, well, maybe quite a few days before it actually opened in theaters. And I still have my ticket. Well, it's actually like it's almost like something that would hang on the end of the lanyard, because that's what it was that you had to get in. I still have that. And, you know, despite my mixed emotions about the film, you know, like I said, I still like Django a lot. And I was talking about being at Star Wars Celebration. I bought a jacket at Star Wars Celebration 2 that it just says Star Wars Celebration on the front, but on the back it's this huge image of Django, and he's got tons of clones behind him. And I still have that jacket and still wear it all the time.
That's cool. I'd love to see a picture of that.
I can do that.
All right. Very, very good. For me, it's a film that, as I said, I didn't know what to expect, and I was happy with that. The Sifo Dyas thing, even after the Clone Wars is fleshed out, is still a little bit confusing.
It's a little troubling. Yeah.
It is, but it's still something that makes me think the Kaminoans are beautiful. Everything on Kamino is beautifully done. We haven't really talked about the clones and the implications there, but I think we could actually save that as a topic for an entire show, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of richness there to look at. But overall, I enjoy episode 2. I really like the novelization of Attack of the Clones, and this is one that I like to revisit. Maybe the most of the prequels of the three, not because it's my favorite of the prequels. Episode 3 is my favorite of the prequels, but because I like the lightsaber play, and I like Anakin and Obi-Wan kind of doing their thing and seeing what a Jedi can do. And Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor are incredible athletes, and you can tell they're very well trained, and the stuntmen or Nick Gilliard is awesome with them. So overall, episode 2 is a lot of fun for me. And speaking of a lot of fun, Scott, tell us about what's coming soon from Assembly of Geeks.
Well, we literally just started what we're calling our third season of shows. We had a tremendous year last year. A lot of new people joined the Geek Assembly last year. We've got some good stuff coming just this month. I mean, on the 23rd of September, we're going to be airing a program that features my interview with Clark Gregg. And it looks like that same episode is going to feature Ann Foley, who is the costume designer for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I think is fantastic timing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, just because, you know, we just got done seeing the costume that Chloe Bennett's going to be wearing as Quake this year, or Daisy this year. It'll fit nicely into Comic Book Noob that week, because we're going to zero in on Mockingbird. So that week will be a very, very Marvel, very Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. themed week. And then as we're recording this, I am putting together our first episode of our new spinoff show called The Gamer's Dominion. I am really excited about this program because it's giving us yet another opportunity, very much like Comic Book Noob, to cover an important geek topic and talk about it in depth, and that is gaming. And Janice Davis is the perfect person to lead those discussions. And she's got a fantastic personality. Anyone who's met her at a con knows that. She's passionate about gaming, a really good gamer herself. And it's going to feature discussions with gamers and interviews with people in the industry. And it's going to run every other Thursday, just like Comic Book Noob. So now, basically, Assembly of Geeks will be putting out an Assembly of Geeks every Wednesday, and then we'll have the Gamers Dominion and Comic Book Noob running every Thursday now.
Wow, and you still have time to eat and sleep, don't you?
Yeah, we fit it in there every once in a while.
You know, as needed. Well, Scott, always it's such a pleasure. Wish we had more time to chat, but there's only so much bandwidth on the internet, and
yep.
You always have wonderful things to say. We really, really appreciate it. Where can people reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Well, I'm always I'm on Twitter quite a bit these days, so I'm at Mr. Scott Murray on Twitter. I'm at Assembly of Geeks, assemblyofgeeks.com. There's ways to email us there through our forum, but also at contact@assemblyofgeeks.com as well. I get those emails, so those are probably the best ways.
Very good, and as always, we will have those in the show notes, and I'm pretty sure you'll be talking with Jeff McGee here in the future as well.
I think we can arrange that.
Yeah. At least once a week.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't get too
once
excited.
A week.
Well, thank you again, Scott, so much.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful night.
You too.
More to add, do you?
Our topic for show number 45 is the fan's journey, Star Wars and traveling. What is it about Star Wars that inspires travel? We'll have a discussion of travel experiences with Mark Newbold and James Burns from Radio 1138. We will talk with these world travelers about how they incorporate their hobby into travel plans. Part 1 will be on Radio 1138, and they will join us here for Part 2. In 300 words or less, be sure to send us an email or an MP3 with your thoughts, comments, questions, and opinions to feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hi, nobody. You read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from John and Maria Jose Tenuto, and they write, "We are two sociology professors from the College of Lake County, Grays Lake, Illinois. We enjoy your show, especially its enthusiasm about all aspects of Star Wars. We were writing to ask if you could mention a series of free library presentations we are giving on our research into the cultural history and influence of Star Wars through newspaper articles. The presentation is being offered at three different libraries to accommodate fans. We have included the links here and a general description of the hour and a half program. Registration is required, although the events are free. Thanks for any help letting fellow fans know about these free events, and thanks for such a great show. May the Force be with you." And that is at skokielibrary.info, and we'll post a link in the show notes. John and Maria Jose, thank you for sending that in. This sounds like a very intriguing presentation that they put together, and I wish I was closer so I could go check it out.
Yeah, this sounds really, really exciting. I mean, of course, Star Wars and education are things that we're very passionate about and think they go well together. And the fact that they're putting this on, if you're in the area, go ahead and tell John and Maria hello for us. And if you want to get an interview with them or just kind of send us your thoughts or review it, we'd love to hear about it because it sounds like an amazing experience. Best of luck, and be sure to check out our show notes for all the information.
And if you do go, be sure and wear your Coffee with Kenobi t-shirt.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 44 of Coffee with Kenobi. A huge thank you to Scott Murray for coming back and looking at the six existing films with us. Be sure to check out Assembly of Geeks for the latest in geek news, reviews, and analysis.
And also thanks to Mark Von Olin for returning and for discussing the latest Topps merchandise. A special shout out to Mediocre Jedi, Mike Audette, Neil Lowry, Dennis Keithley, Angela Souse, Chris Perillo, Graham Densham, Jesse, Laughing Says, and the rest of our CWK family for their contributions to our Coffee with Kenobi Patreon page.
By supporting our Patreon page, you too can win a Coffee Chat podcast of your very own. Check out our webpage or the show notes for more information. You can also support the show by using our Amazon.com affiliate link, as well as by purchasing your The Force Awakens movie tickets through the banner on the front page of our website.
And thanks also to Rob at The Bearded Trio, media specialist Lisa Dullard, our Coffee with Kenobi bloggers, everyone who contributed to this show, and to all of you out there who listen to and email Coffee with Kenobi. Don't forget to send us your comments and opinions on the topic of show number 45, The Fan's Journey, Star Wars and Traveling.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.